Redline.
Republika Srpska, the semi-autonomous part of Bosnia-Herzegovina that was created in the aftermath of the country's civil war, infuriated the West and sparked warmongering rhetoric from Sarajevo after holding a referendum on whether to continue celebrating its founding holiday on the same date as it's always been doing for over the past two decades. In an article titled, "Will Republika Srpska's National Day Referendum Herald a Vote on Independence from Bosnia?" carried by BNE and Telenews and written by Klar Nuttall, the journalist wrote that, "The dust is still settling in Bosnia after the referendum, where a startlingly 99.8% of voters backed a proposal to make January 9th the official Republic Day holiday, and that the referendum was seen as important because local elections will take place on October 2nd and the SNSD had been lagging in the polls. Dodik and his party are now expected to gain a boost from the September 25th vote. On the other hand, for as positive of an event as this was for the Serbs, the referendum was perceived very negatively by the other inhabitants of Bosnia," with Nuttall pointing out that Bosniak politicians in Sarajevo have been more vocal in their criticism. Bakir Izetbegovic, the Bosniak member of Bosnia's tripartite presidency, slammed the referendum as a notorious example of a violation of the Dayton Agreement that ended the Bosnian War in 1995, and compared Dodik to former Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. Wartime Bosnian Muslim leader Sefer Halilovic took an even stronger stance in advance of the referendum, claiming it would unpack the Dayton peace deal and could lead to war.
Andrew, today everybody is talking about the war in Syria, which is making world headlines. But at the same time, let us not forget that in '90s we had a war in the Balkans. And now some are saying that there's still risk of the resumption of hostilities in Balkans, which still remain in Pandora box. That's why I think that there's a strong reason for us today to take the topic of this Republika Srpska referendum, which was omitted by past by world media, but this is very important and the situation is pretty serious.
Well, this is why we're discussing it today, Sergei, and we're going to begin by speaking to our in-studio guest, Mr. Andrei Fyodorov. He's director at the Center for Political Studies think tank and was Russia's former deputy foreign minister, incidentally, right around during this time. So I'd like to ask you, I mean, you know, you're very familiar with the Dayton agreements, and there's been some talk now that the so-called bond powers might be used to dismiss Dodik, with the High Commissioner actually just shuffling it around. I know that this would be a huge escalation. What do you think are the prospects of this happening, and actually, why is this even an issue right now anyhow?
First of all, I think that the situation there is not so much dangerous as it's described by some commentators. And I think that no one, finally, would like to take a risk to restart, to change the balance of forces and current geopolitical structure of the former Yugoslavia. It's too risky for everyone, especially it's too risky for Serbia, which is trying to join European Union. It's too risky also for Bosnia-Herzegovina, and it's too risky for Albania and the other involved countries in this complex. The thing is very clear. After so many years passed, there is another generation. There is another point of view on the history. And at the same time, in Republika Srpska, there is new wave of self-identification. And this referendum is a part of this self-identification. It's not just pure political step. It's a moral step. It's an attempt to keep identity, when the situation changed.
Mr. Fyodorov, let me ask you about Russia's position. Probably you noticed that just 2 days before the referendum, Bosnian Serb leader Milorad Dodik visited Moscow and he met President Putin. And there was a lot of speculation, wild speculation in Western media. Some were saying, accusing President Putin of backing Bosnian Serb separatism and sowing chaos in the European Union. What do you make out of that accusation? What are the Russia's stake, actually, in the whole
First
the
of gamble? All, we, for all those years, for all the last years, 20 years, we were working closely with Serbia. We are working closely with Republika Srpska. We are supporting them, and behind this there are also obvious religious moments and political moments as well. And from this point of view, this meeting was nothing super special, supernatural. It's a kind of clear sign
yes.
that we are we are watching the situation. We will help if the help will be needed. And at the same time, everything which was said by Putin was very much balanced. Because we also understand that breaking down of Dayton Agreement is too risky for everyone. The new war on Balkans is maybe much more dangerous because it will be a new generation war. And behind this will be not the dissolvement of Yugoslavia, but totally new political situation, which makes it more risky.
So it was not, do I get it right, that it was not about sowing chaos, how the Western media is accusing?
No.
But sending strong signal that we are with Serbs.
Yes.
And we will not...
And the religious factor was stressed by Putin very seriously.
Yeah, there definitely is a common identity. And I just want to go back to part of my original question about what the High Commissioner could do. You said there's no intent to change borders, but there's a lot of overreaction from the side of the West and Sarajevo. Could they possibly use these bone powers to dismiss Dodik? I mean, what do you think can happen with that?
I don't think so. Not at this stage. Maybe later on, but not at this stage. Because it will be one more headache for EU, for the West. And there are still so many other headaches at this moment. And to take one more risky decision, I don't think it will happen now.
Okay, so why do you think this actually kind of became such an explosive issue in Bosnia? I mean, do you think that it was because of some of the on-the-ground actors, such as the so-called Bosniaks and Krauts? I mean, were they kind of overinflating the importance of this referendum to attract more international attention?
Yeah, but the problem is that history is still pressing on all of them, and they cannot get rid of historical background of Bosnia-Herzegovina, of many things which they happened during the Civil War. And this pushes both sides, by the way, for certain kind, sometimes, to provoke in a new way, so to connect today with the past, with the history.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Mr. Fedorov. We're going to move over to our first guest in the line. This is Mr. Borislav Karkadelevich. He's an editor and author from Belgrade.
Red Line.
Hello, Mr. Karkadelevich. How are you today?
Good morning, sir. I'm fine. What about you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you. You know, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I wanted to ask you about Mr. Vucic's position, because it seems like he didn't want to get much too involved. And actually, you know, I speak to a lot of Serbs, and every single Serb that I spoke to, they told me that they're prouder of Dodik than Vucic. And some even provocatively said that they feel like the Serbian capital is in Banja Luka, not Belgrade anymore. What do you make out of this?
Yeah, I think that is a bit of exaggeration. When you are speaking about capitals, you can also, one very important player should mention, that is Moscow. So I think the situation is more or less the same like it was prior to the referendum. There was a lot of noise, but I think slowly atmosphere will cool down, and we will see things in Bosnia as usual. And that means nothing will happen, unfortunately, on the economic front. On the political front, there will be another week of preparations for the elections on the local level, so a lot of heat. But after 2nd of October, things will start to cool down, and I think more or less everything will be the same. That means Bosnia will continue to be dysfunctional state. Banja Luka will look towards Belgrade and Moscow. Mostar, which is heavily populated by Croats, will look towards Zagreb and Brussels and Berlin. And Sarajevo, predominantly Muslim, we look towards Ankara.
Okay, you know, with these conditions, as you are quite rightly described, how can Bosnia even join the EU? I know that Sarajevo, they want to join, and just this month they applied for admission and everything. I mean, it seems like all the entities in Bosnia are looking in completely different cardinal directions. Under these conditions, how can this so-called unified Bosnia join the EU, which itself is falling apart?
Yeah, it is a huge question how every country from the West Balkans would be admitted to European Union. First of all, we will have to see what will happen with European Union in next few years. And in next few years, definitely any of the countries which have been candidates for several years will not be accepted to the Union. So that is a huge question mark for every country in Western Balkans, including Serbia, not to mention Bosnia. And as you have rightly said, Bosnia is has a huge problems. And I think the main way out is just to try to leave it as it is now, that is according to Dayton agreements, to function as it was doing last 20 or 21 years, and slowly to prepare it for eventual larger integrations, because Bosnia can stay as it is sort of entity only if its economy will link three nations and their people. And also, economy can function only in larger integration, not in within the boundaries of Bosnia. So, yes, Bosnia needs larger integration. Bosnia needs stronger economy, but I'm rather pessimistic that it will be possible to achieve in very short time.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Mr. Karkadelovic. Unfortunately, we're running a little bit out of time, so we have to get to our next guest. Thank you for appearing on our program again. Thank you. Right now, we're going to move over to Ms. Daniela Radojicic. She's a Serbian political observer from Belgrade.
Red Line.
Okay, Daniela, I want to ask you about what Bakir Izetbegovic said. You know, he's the leader of the Bosnian Muslims, and he threatened Dodik by warning that he might, quote, end up like Gaddafi, Saddam, or Milosevic, end quote. And we know that all three of these leaders were overthrown by the U.S. and later ended up dead. So what do you think Izetbegovic was getting at when he made this metaphor?
I think he's just speaking. They're just words. You know, there were even some headlines appear here in Serbia, Serbian press, and it was written like Izetbegovic promised is to impale Dodik, you know, impalement, what the Ottomans did. Do you know that, how they did that to the...
Yes, yes. They would stick him on the pole, very gruesome death.
Yes, yes, horribly. And that's the old Ottoman tradition here in Balkans. But I don't take it seriously, you know, because if anything happens to Dodik, anything like attack, like assassination or whatever, such a thing would certainly make him a hero. And you know that every idea, everything, grows strong from blood of those who die for it. And they don't want it.
Yeah, these are very powerful points. You know, I was wondering, you know, if we look, kind of look at the bigger picture here with Izetbegovic and what he said and the, you know, national referendum that just happened and just the whole general situation in the Balkans, where do you see it all headed? And what do you think is the main significance of this referendum and the reaction to it? What does it say about the future? And how is the past influencing that future?
Oh, the past has a very strong influence here. And the past here has never been, you know, milk and honey, but very, very bloody. But no, it's you know what's significant now, that acting of Erdogan, since you remember, we all remember Erdogan as a man who came several times here screaming, Bosnia is Turkey, Turkey is Bosnia. And now, when all the world is about this referendum, yelling against Serbs, against Republic of Srpska, he keeps silent. You know, it probably surprised Bosnian Muslim leaders because he's more or less, he didn't have any reaction, at least I don't know about it. Some strong, like saying, oh, that cannot happen. Oh, I'm going to do and so and so. You know, he remains silent. Since Turkey is the strong supporter of Bakir Izetbegovic, I don't think that they are going to make anything drastic, but I also don't think that Turkey has reduced their geopolitical appetites. Just their priorities at the moment to keep the best possible relationship with Vladimir Putin and Russia. And that's it. And that's one good point that may calm the situation down, you know, but the Balkan can easily explode. This referendum can just be used as a casus belli for just another war, like a Kristallnacht in Germany, if big forces, powers want war. For example, we know traditionally Great Britain supports all the Sunni Muslims since ever in Balkans. We remember when there were Turkish-Russian wars in the past, there were British Brits, a lot of them fighting alongside Ottomans against Russians. We all know that. That's the history. And they're doing the same. Their influence is extremely strong here, and their politics didn't change and have never changed since, I don't know, 15th century here. And that's it. But I don't expect anything radical. First, it's because winter is coming, and no one starts wars in winter, I think.
Daniela, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been very informative to speak to you, and we're very happy to have brought you on the program. Thank you. Okay, Sergey, in wrapping everything up, I think that this event was very, very important, but international media did not give it its fair due in the press, and that's why we had to discuss it. And even though things are calm now, I wonder, is it just the calm before the storm?
I hope that there will be no storm, and I think that it's a question of balance. The balance of genuine interests of the semi-autonomous region, which has genuine right to celebrate its own national holiday, and on the other hand, not to allow the situation to slide to a new conflict.
Yes, absolutely. So we're going to thank all of our guests for participating, beginning with your in-studio guest, Mr. Andrei Fyodorov. He's director at the Center for Political Studies think tank, and he was Russia's former deputy foreign minister. We also spoke to Mr. Borislav Kokardelevich. He's editor and author from Belgrade. And last but not least, we also spoke to Ms. Daniela Radojicic. She's a Serbian political observer from Belgrade. Following in our program, we have Shimon Peres, the Israeli hawk of peace. Stay with us.